Coach Hodenmeyer is on the line with us. Let's go ahead and bring him in right now. Great weekend of football, Coach. How you doing?
It was a good weekend. If you like defensive football, the two defenses showed up.
Boy, didn't they, huh?
Yeah, they really did.
Now, 2 weeks to the Super Bowl. You've been to several Super Bowls. You've coached them. You've been down there. What's going on with these two camps now as they get ready? You've just found out you're in the Super Bowl. It's the next day. Does everybody kind of just celebrate now for a day?
Well, yeah, the players will have the players will in all likelihood have tomorrow off, Tuesday. Monday will be the day that they'll come in so that everybody can get bumps and bruises checked and they can get well on the way to a healing program by the end of the week. And because these teams won't leave for California until probably Sunday. And so they need to get everybody as well as they can at home this week. And then get ready for a week of disruption with their practice schedules in San Francisco.
Exactly. When they get to San Francisco, they're going to be media day. It's a big day. They got all kinds of things. But before I get to that, this week, your local press, does that become a disruption for the team? If you're
no more so than usual, really. The press and the local beat. Generally has a time each day where they're allowed access to the players, and that won't vary from what it was during the season. It'll be pretty standard.
Have the coaches started to put their game plan together yet?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure that they have. They probably started that early this morning, and, of course, neither one of them knew who they were going to play, so that they'll be well on the way to that, and they have today to put it in, and tomorrow all day and night, both tonight and tomorrow night, to get it in before the players show up on Wednesday.
Every player that's going to the Super Bowl has heard from lost aunts and uncles and everybody in their family for tickets. They all want to go. When does a player have time to attend to that? Is that next week at the Super Bowl, or can they get a little early start on that?
No, they'd like for that to get done this week. They'd like for players to get that all taken care of by Thursday or Friday. And you're right. That's what becomes a little bit overwhelming for both coaches and players are the number of people that would like to go to this game. But most teams try to get that taken care of by Thursday or Friday. They just ask everybody to be conscientious and get done what you need to get done. So that you can schedule meetings and stuff around it, and it doesn't become a distraction more than it has to be.
Coach, how many tickets does each player get?
I don't know right now in 2015 or 2016 how many tickets a player gets. The last Super Bowl that I was in, we gave each of our players 30.
30? Wow.
Yeah.
Well, you could really make some money off that.
You could if you sold them.
Yeah, it's bigger than the pot.
But, no, not really.
But you know, probably all kidding aside, that's barely enough. I can't imagine the requests you get with your business contacts and truly your aunts and uncles, people in your family, your wife's family. That's not really as many as it sounds.
Oh, yeah, there's people coming out of the woodwork. All of a sudden, people are going to have relatives in California that they didn't think they had.
Coach, have you been to that stadium, Levi's Stadium?
No, it's brand new. I've been by it. I haven't been in it.
I assume that's going to be a wonderful venue for it, or they wouldn't have moved it there.
Yeah, I think it will be. That's part of what they promise a community that's willing to put together a new stadium for a team. And this happens to be the year for Levi. I think next year they go to the frozen tundra in Minneapolis next year. I don't know where, but that's part of what a city gets when they put up the money for a new stadium. They generally get promised a Super Bowl.
Yeah, they'll be indoors next year though up there, won't they?
Yeah. Yes, it will.
Yeah, but still, there's not much to do the Super Bowl week in Minneapolis.
The coaches like that.
Yeah, there really isn't much to do. There's not much to do for families either. And, you know, people in the north think that there's something to do, but it's very different when you're coming from outside Minneapolis area.
You know, you've told us gee, hundreds of times how coaches like things to be consistent, and they do the same things, and they go to the same hotels, do this at the same time. Would do you think a good way to explain this might be that they would treat this like an off week in the regular season, as far as plays and getting ready?
Yeah, probably very similar. They would treat this very similarly to a bye week. Although I think that these teams will probably go to work pretty heavy Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. I think they'll try to get three really solid work days in Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday before they have to start thinking about getting on a plane and getting people located with all kind of relatives and everything in the Bay Area. They'll try to get that out of the way Saturday afternoon and Sunday, and try to get everybody in bed Sunday night so that they can go to work Monday morning, which will only be disrupted during that week by media day, which is a major disruption, but it's one that you know is going to happen, and so you can get it accounted for. And then a little more Super Bowl media that you have to deal with each day on a daily basis.
Well, now, the charter flights, will they fly the immediate family of each player to the Super Bowl as well?
Different teams do it different ways. The Super Bowls that I've been to, the team went down on Sunday, and the families were flown down on Thursday.
Oh.
Yeah, you don't want them there the whole time. No.
I don't think any coach wants them there the whole time. I don't think any players want them there the whole time either.
Especially with children. You know, little. Yeah. That's got to be a real distraction.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, do you get a chance to spend time with your family when they get there on Thursday, Friday night, anytime? Or are you at the hotel?
Well, quite frankly, you don't want to spend time with your family. This is one of the biggest events in your professional life, and you're trying to put a plan together, and you're trying to put if you're a player, you're trying to put together a plan for how you're going to handle your individual matchups, and as a coach, you're trying to figure out how you're going to make sure that everything within the game plan is covered, and at that point in time, families just become a distraction. Guys will generally choose to perhaps eat with their spouses or their families on Friday evening, but that's probably about it.
That's so interesting to me, because I can imagine the family screaming. Here's Mama and the uncles and the aunts, you're down there and you're up playing football. Well, maybe they do all understand. And let's go back to yesterday's game. Denver defense did a tremendous job on Brady. I read somewhere today 20 hits was the most of any regular season game this year that any quarterback has got hit. You get all the way to the championship game and you get your guy pounded around like that, obviously not what you expect.
Not what you expect at all, and I've never seen anybody do that to Brady. I've never seen – Brady didn't have a comfortable minute the entire afternoon. He was in a war every time the ball was snapped, and there really wasn't a whole lot that his guys could do about it, because that defense absolutely came to play, and just as Carolina's did. There were 22 angry men in those two games, and they were all playing for Denver and Carolina.
Coach, a lot has been made of the fact that obviously the Denver defense played great, but a lot of people don't think they're going to be able to do that to Cam Newton, because Cam Newton's offensive line is pretty good, and New England had guys out. They've had trouble with their offensive line. It's amazing they got to the championship game, I think. I don't think they'll be able to do what they did to Brady to Cam Newton.
I doubt it. Nobody's done that this year. And as long as Stewart is healthy and they can get the ball in his hands a little bit, and, they found out creative ways to get it to Ginn, too, by handing it to him on reverses. Mm-hmm. And then whenever you play Carolina, the best running back is number one.
Right.
I mean, you got to figure out a way to handle him. So, no, it won't be nearly as easy for Denver to defend at all, and I thought Coach Phillips did a tremendous job against New England, just a tremendous job. I think New England was just absolutely floored that anybody could do that to them. But you're right, they were a little bit of a piecemeal offensive line, and Carolina's is pretty firm and pretty set, and the guys that make the offensive line work, Newton and the tight end are tremendous players. So I think that Denver's got their hands full this week.
You know, just to wrap that up, apparently when they left the field, Belichick went over to Wade Phillips and said, "You called a hell of a game against us." So even Belichick realized what a great job Wade Phillips did.
Yeah, no question about that. They tried different ways to patch up what was happening to them, and they never succeeded. But you got to hand it to Denver's defensive ends. Those guys were on a mission, and they got it done.
And, you know, Coach, they did it with relatively few blitzes. I mean, I think I read that there was only 29% blitzes in the whole game. They were getting to them with the front four.
Yeah, those guys are tremendous corner rushers. They really are. And I, you know, they'll try to get that with Newton too. But getting to Newton and getting to Brady are two different things, because Newton will move a lot more and a lot more suddenly than Brady does.
Von Miller yesterday led the way for Denver with 2.5 sacks and interception. Ware was all over him. You mentioned those defensive ends. Talk to me about them and why they're so difficult to stop.
Well, the reason that those guys are so difficult to stop is it's very, very hard to stop either one of those guys when they get their motor cranked up and when they're healthy like they are right now, with a one-on-one block from a tackle. And particularly Denver had a huge advantage because they had, 90,000 people or whatever it is, as their 12th man. That's very tough on offensive tackles. If you don't have a back to chip or a tight end to chip that rusher, your tackles are in serious position every time the ball is snapped, because those guys get a jump. They see the ball being snapped a little quicker than offensive linemen realize it's being snapped.
And another thing, Coach, about that game, there were relatively few penalties. I mean, it was a pretty clean played game. Both those teams, even with the crowd noise, seemed to be on cue.
It was a clean played game. Guys realize that when you get to this point in the season, they don't want to cost their team a penalty. And really what you see, Mike, at this point in the year, we've talked about this before, the officials are going to let you play. The only thing that they're not going to let you play through is something that happens in front of God and everybody. Like that kid running out of bounds for 50 yards on that punt. They can't let that go. They can't let a guy grabbing a jersey of a guy running down the field not go with defensive holding. But they're not going to be calling any inline holds and blocking in the run game. And they're not really going to be calling any interference penalties on guys that are battling equally for a ball. They're just not going to do it. It's not going to be like it is in the season. But anything that happens in front of everybody that they can't get away with not calling, they will call.
Cam Newton, obviously maybe the MVP, maybe probably the MVP in this league, had another great game yesterday. Start with talking to me about him. This kid's he's as good as quarterback as I've seen.
Well, he's really on a roll right now. He's got everything going good. He's throwing it with great touch. He's got a tight end that really makes him look good. That kid comes up with unbelievable catches. He's turned into a real quality receiver. And right now, just the threat of Cam being able to take off and run with the ball keeps people off of him to an extent. You know, one of the tough things about Newton is if you get him rushed off the edges and you get up and under a tackle somehow, the guy flushes out the back end of the pocket just as well as anybody I've ever seen. And once he gets on the move, he's a load because he's running as fast as most of those pass rushers are. And if he escapes the pocket, now you got a real problem defensively because he's got a run pass option.
And he's 255 pounds or something.
Yeah, at least, probably 260.
So, I mean, you get hit with that guy. It's not like a normal quarterback. You can just go up and wrap up. This guy, good word, he's a load.
Yeah, you saw him on the goal line. It wasn't like they didn't know what was coming. They knew what was coming, but he still jammed that ball in the end zone on him. And And he'll do that down there.
To go back to this, the first game, just a second. Watching Gronkowski yesterday, they double-teamed him most of the day. He has got to be one of the best weapons ever playing in the NFL.
He's certainly one of the better tight ends that's ever played. He's a tight end that can threaten you, really, really threaten you down the field, which a lot of tight ends can't. But he can threaten you up the field as well as underneath and in the sideline routes. He's just a huge, huge body. He's got to be at least 6'6", and he plays it like a guy in the post in basketball, and he screens those DBs, and they can't really get to him. I thought what Brady and Gronkowski did the last 3 minutes of that game was fantastic.
Belichick, obviously a Hall of Fame coach, all year long is just kept up with his reputation of next man up. They were riddled with injuries all year. I think it's fair. I think you'll agree that yesterday just ran out of magic. They were too beat up.
Yeah, they ran out of magic, but they also ran into a heck of a prepared football team defensively. I mean, on a good day, you know, if they're going to be able to get to you like Phillips did with his game plan, they're going to make it very tough on New England. You know, New England needed to be playing that game at home because, like I say, the Broncos defense had an advantage playing in Denver yesterday, and it was something that New England couldn't handle.
Pretty good chance that this Super Bowl is going to be Peyton Manning's last game, win-lose. And I think pretty much everybody's figuring that. Great way to go out Super Bowl no matter what, I guess. Obviously, he wants to win. But to have the career he's had and being this last year and the Brady thing yesterday and going on to the Super Bowl, talk about magic. He's a magic story.
He is a magic story, and I think it'll be important in the Super Bowl that they start fast like they did yesterday. I think Denver starting fast against New England was a big plus for them yesterday, and they'll need to be able to take that on against Carolina too, because Carolina's moniker really this year has been that they start fast every week. Every week they jump on top of you in the first half, and somehow Denver's got to figure out a way to nullify that and make the game where they're ahead or at least even at halftime.
We talked about Brady getting hit 20 times yesterday. Manning's got to face an awfully good defense too. It's going to be interesting to see what they do with him. And again, that aging old body. He threw a couple of pretty good passes yesterday, but he's 39 years old.
Yeah, he threw some strikes yesterday, and he also took off and ran with it for 10 yards one time, which is amazing to me. That was thoroughly unexpected, but he realizes he's playing his last two games probably, and he's got nothing to leave in the bag. He's going to lay it on the line.
You know, I didn't do the research, but I guess we could look back on it. But to have two Hall of Famers in a championship game like they had, now we got a Hall of Famer for sure and one coming on the way. But we got the best quarterbacks. I think we got the best teams. This has really been great competition, a good year for the NFL.
Oh, yeah, really good year. This thing's coming down and coming out the way you'd like for it to. You know, the number one seeds in both conferences are who's playing each other in the Super Bowl, and that's kind of the way it ought to be.
You know, a little side time here. Tom Coughlin did not go to the Eagles, but John Mara said today that he is just absolutely relieved that he didn't go. He said he couldn't stand the idea of him walking around with a green hat on. I guess they would have let Tom go anywhere, but they were pretty, on alert about him going to the Eagles.
Yeah, I don't know what the decision was there and why he decided not to, but that would be something that if I were John Mara, I wouldn't want to see either.
Yeah, he was not a happy camper. Coach Erdmeyer, who do you like in the Super Bowl?
I think after looking at what you looked at yesterday, how can you pick against Carolina?
Yep.
I mean, this team is on a roll. They're physical. They're very physical. They're just about as physical offensively as they are defensively, which gives them a little bit of an advantage over Denver. Denver's a physical defense, but not offensively. And I just think Carolina's going to be very hard to stop.
Coach Erdmeyer, thanks so much. We appreciate it as always.
You bet, guys.
Bye, Coach.
Coach Steve Erdmeyer, everybody. And many, many years in the NFL. We'll have him again on Friday. And, of course, leading right up to the Super Bowl, too, right here on ESPN Sports Radio 1300. Rick Couch is with us now. He's a national columnist for the Bleacher Report, and there's been a lot of talk about the betting scandal going on in tennis, and we'll kind of catch up with it. Maybe we can be explained a couple of things to us here, too. Greg, welcome to the show. How you doing?
Great. Thanks for having me.
Hello, Greg.
Hi, Greg.
Things are tough right now in the tennis world.
What's that?
I said things are tough in the tennis world right now.
Yeah, not only are they fixing matches, but they have a major championship going on, and there aren't any interesting matches being played. So that's kind of a bad combination.
I want to read this one paragraph from you in your column today. Over an alleged match, the tennis world right now is aflame over an alleged match-fixing gambling scandal that is ruining the first of its four annual parties, the Australian Open, and threatening the credibility of all of its star players and the sport itself. An investigation by BuzzFeed and the BBC analyzed the betting activity on 26,000 professional matches from 2009 to 15 and found the field for the year's first major is littered with suspected match fixtures. At least one major singles champion is suspected of having lost matches on purpose for gamblers. Well, where do you begin? Are we ever going to know who this singles guy is? Why don't they tell us who the singles guy is?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, well, the reason that BuzzFeed and BBC aren't telling us is because they say they can't quite nail down matching up the player with the specific gambler. I mean, I don't quite understand it, to be honest with you. But tennis has always been hiding. They've known about that they've had a gambling problem for a long time, and they just hide it. You know, they've created this tennis integrity unit 8 or 9 years ago, and when there was a match that was clearly thrown by a guy named Nikolai Davydenko, who was a top 10 player, and they created the Tennis Integrity Unit, and since then they've busted a bunch of guys ranked, you know, like 6,000th in the world. I mean, they bust guys who no one's ever heard of and no one cares about, and that's kind of their way of saying, see, we're on it. But, you know, so to me, the fact that the way the tennis, you know, the governing bodies have just hidden this thing, and they're all sort of in bed with each other, that tennis is about the most incestuous sport out there with all the different governing bodies and, you know, agents, and they're all related. Everyone's connected. And so they're hiding things from the public, and this is what they get. I mean, I think they're getting what they deserve. If they'd have stepped up and made a serious effort to try to stop this thing, clearly we would know that, you know, I mean, like, we know some people are using steroids, some people are gambling on, you know, and there's on sports and all the sports. But if the main governing bodies were actually making an open, public, you know, serious attempt to fight it, I think that, you know, we on the other side of this thing watching the sports would feel, you know, there's some credibility going on there.
Kind of sounds like FIFA in a way to me. I'm curious. I'm going to go back. Have you seen the match that they say Davydenko, you know, through? I mean, I remember him. I'm a pretty big tennis fan. I watch tennis and have for years. I guess it's pretty easy to find out if you just keep hitting the ball in the net or hitting it over the baseline. It's probably pretty easy to see.
Well, I watched part of that match when the scandal came out. I think it was 2007, if I remember right.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If I remember, Davydenko was in the top 10, and this other guy was ranked 70th or 80th or something, and there was suddenly a whole bunch of money bet on the guy who was ranked 70th or 80th. And Davydenko, again, I'm just going on memory here, but I believe he took the lead in that match, and then he suddenly got hurt and stopped playing after a bunch of money had been bet on the other guy.
Yeah, now, well, kind of we've been following the last couple of weeks. The fourth league, I think, was one time referred to, and I tried to use a metaphor like double-A baseball or triple-A baseball, and I didn't think that there would be much betting on those lower matches, but I guess that's how they kind of discovered some of this, because big bets started to get put on some of these smaller matches.
Well, that's right. You know, with tennis, there are a lot of these gambling houses have websites where you can watch a lot of these sports streaming. I think there's one called Sport Lemon, if I remember right, and there's one called, I can't remember them right now, but you can just watch these lower-level matches or, you know, other sports, too. You can just watch them. And I don't know. I mean, I don't know how the sport is allowing websites from gambling houses to stream these matches. But, you know, there's easy access, my point is, to really low-level, you know, like you said, minor league, single-A, double-A kind of matches. And, you know, it's... you get a guy ranked 580th in the world or something, I mean, it might not be that easy to tell when he's throwing a match. I mean, he might just not be that good, you know. And these guys are scrambling to make a living, and you know, someone comes up and offers them, you know, a significant pot of money to throw a match. I mean, I'm not saying, you know, that they should do it, but I'm just trying to explain why those guys are more vulnerable. But I will say this. Some of these guys, for sure, like a couple of these guys that the Tennis Integrity Unit busted, I mean, one of them was nailed for something like he bet $900 total over 30 matches. I mean, it's just like he's betting $30 with his friend on matches. It's not like there's any danger of throwing. If these guys are throwing matches over $30, then
right.
then you know, they're not in the right profession.
Greg, is this worldwide? Are these gambling houses worldwide? I mean, I never hear of anyone that bets on tennis here. Where is this the most prevalent?
Well, you know, I actually asked John McEnroe about this once, and he said that when he was playing, you could actually just walk off the court even between sets and place a bet there in the grounds of Wimbledon. You know, and at the Australian Open, I remember writing about a gambling scandal there once, and I remember just walking into the stadium, into the grounds once, and I noticed there was a gigantic poster or billboard or something. It was the tournament was sponsored by a gambling house, the major Australian Open. And then there's even a tournament, I want to say in Austria, I think, or Germany, where the title sponsor is a gambling house. So I think it's less so in the U.S. Mm-hmm. as far as being so open. But I'm not saying they aren't gambling out of here, because like I said, you can just call up the gambling websites, watch the match, and gamble on them right off your computer.
Well, and you get part of the story of the CEO of IMG, and IMG is one of those companies that are involved with the agencies and really run on the whole thing. At any rate, this CEO, Ted Frostman, who has since died, admitting to betting on tennis matches, including on his friend and then MIG client, Roger Federer. Understand that the IMG owns several important tennis tournaments, also serves as the agent for several top players. It's not just some outside entity. It's built for the power structure of the sport. And my friends here asked me, well, what difference does that make if they all own it? That doesn't got anything to do with gambling. They're IMG. Why would they want to gamble? Well, they know everybody, so they have inside information. Is that the deal?
That's what Forsman told. You know, the guy, it's kind of a, you know, there's a lawsuit involved, and I did a lot of reporting on this back then. I used to work for AOL Fanhouse, and the guy, well, I don't want to make too long of a story out of it, but there's a guy who was suing Forsman because Forsman was giving him money to gamble on sports, and particularly a lot on tennis, and the guy was putting it into his company's funds, and the IRS wanted him to pay taxes on that money, so the guy was suing Forsman to get money back for his taxes. He said that Forsman had bet $40,000 on Federer to beat Nadal once at the French Open, and he said he asked Forsman, well, why are you doing this? And he said, don't worry about it. I just talked to Roger. You know, I know what I'm doing. I mean, that's not accusing Federer of throwing a match or anything. It's just, like you just said, it's these guys have inside information, and they have access to it. Nobody else has access to that. And IMG is as close a thing as there is to an owner of tennis. I mean, like I said, like you said, they own tournaments. They own, they represent players. I mean, this story came out, again, I mean, patting myself on the back, but mostly because I kept writing about it. And the ATP Tour finally, decided to investigate, mostly because they felt pressured to. And then they let the guy go. Well, I look at the board of directors. I'm sorry, they let the CEO of IMG, all they did was slap him on the back of the hand. And when I looked at the board of directors of the ATP Tour, one of them was a current vice president of IMG. One of them was an executive of the Tennis Channel, which is partly owned by IMG. One of them was a former player who is currently still represented by IMG. I mean, it's just all connected. So they're gambling, they're covering it up, they're letting the guy go, and now they have this gambling, you know, thing that's coming public. And like I said, they're getting what they deserve. If you don't, when you have a scandal, if you don't try to fight it off and try to, you know, do the right thing, of course it's going to come back and haunt you again. They're getting what they deserve.
Do you think any of these major names are going to come out before we let you go? You think we're going to hear about a Federer, or do you think they're going to bury all of this? At least try.
That's a tough one, because I think, you know, Andy Murray is dying for that. He keeps saying he wants these names to come out, because he realizes when you say one of the at least one guy who's won a major, or one player who's won a major, is in on this. I mean, there, how many people have won majors in the last 8 or 9 years? It's always
19, I think.
I mean, and Serena Williams. We're not talking about that many players here. And Murray is, you know, Murray's saying, well, you know, when you say one of us, you know, that throws my name into it. So I suspect we will get a name, but it won't be one of these big ones. It's, you know, it'll be someone who's won a major who we don't hear of a lot or something. I don't know. I just wonder if he'll come up with someone to try to whitewash the thing again. You can see I have no faith in these people.
It's a Bleacher Report, and he's the national commentator. I want you to check out Greg Couch. They do a great job. We go to him every single day. Greg, thanks so much for being with us. Okay, we go right back to the Bleacher Report, and our mainstay, Carl Buschek, is on the line with us. We're going to catch up with what is going on in the hot stove around the Major League Baseball. Carl, how you doing?
Very good. How are you today?
Hello, Carl.
Hi, Carl.
Carl, there are so many good stories out there, but Cespedes, I know it's already done. It's not anything you have to speculate on any longer, but I thought that was a great deal for the Mets. That one-year deal, in effect, is what they wanted, and kind of that's what they got.
Yeah, I think that Sandy Alderson deserves a round of applause. I mean, that might be the best deal of the offseason. Got a true impact player and didn't have to sign him for like 6 or 7 years. He got him for 3 years. And with that opt-out clause, maybe only one.
Yeah. And he wants to go back out, I guess. It's not going to be as deep a field next year, and maybe he gets the big paycheck next year.
Yeah, and as we've talked about in the past, Cespedes is a guy who thrives on the big stage, and there's really no bigger stage than New York. Word was he preferred to play in New York instead of in Washington, and that's where he's going to be next season.
A lot of folks around here, Cincinnati Reds fans, obviously, they've been trying to rebuild that team, and you say Jay Bruce may not be back with the Reds next year.
To me, I think it makes a lot of sense to try and move his contract, you know, making $12 million, I think something like that next year. The Reds obviously trying to build for the future. Kind of the stumbling block is that he had 26 home runs last year, but his overall numbers were pretty much down. And that's 2 years in a row where he hasn't quite been his old self. So maybe you try and wait until July. Maybe you hope he has a good first half. But I would be shocked if he's on the team by the time the trade deadline passes.
Well, the Giants are where you speculate he may go to, were number 26 in the big leagues last year. And Bruce, he had 26 home runs, and that would have been good for the team lead with the Giants.
Yeah, and as we know, the Giants are certainly going for it this year. They've already added all of those guys, your old friend Johnny Cueto, probably being the headliner. I think Jay Bruce would be a great fit in left field. AT&T Park, obviously not as friendly to hit in as what he's got out there in Cincinnati, but the numbers would line up very nicely for the Giants.
Brandon Phillips seems to me, as a Reds fan, to be the player most likely to be moved because they got that player from the Yankees that can move in at second base, and I kind of think that we see a deal before even the season starts, something going on with Brandon Phillips.
Brandon Phillips is a tricky one. As we know, the Reds tried to send him to the Nationals, and he essentially held the organization hostage and said he wanted a severance package. So Phillips has that no trade clause. It's really up to him where he's going to be playing next year. And it could be tough to get rid of him unless they can find a place that he really wants to play with.
Carlos Gonzalez from the Colorado Rockies. He's been the center of a lot of trade talk throughout this offseason.
Yeah, Carlos Gonzalez is a guy who you kind of wonder why he hasn't been traded already. 40 home runs last year. He was third in the National League. That's obviously tremendous power. Really, the only thing I can figure is that teams are a bit leery about his home and away splits. You know, when you dig into the numbers, he's an absolute monster at altitude in Coors Field. But then when he goes on the road, his numbers are far more average. So I wonder if teams are a bit worried if he's kind of a Coors Field mirage.
Chicago White Sox have stepped up a lot this year, trying to get a little rebuilding going on in the Windy City. What do you think about their moves and anything left with those guys?
I'm glad they fixed that offense. If you had the chance to watch them last year, they were absolutely brutal. Pretty much last in every big category in the American League. I like the Todd Frazier addition the most. I'm not so big on Brett Laurie, Navarro, or Alex Avila. But really the biggest issue to me with the White Sox is that division. The American League Central is just absolutely savage. The Royals are the world champs. We all know about the Twins. The Tigers have reloaded. Even the Indians have a sneaky good rotation. So White Sox, it could be a tough one.
Who do you think is having the best offseason so far?
I think the Cubs probably have to take that bow. I mean, Lackey, Hayward, even if Hayward's deal looks too big, and of course, Zobrist. But, I mean, shoot, with the Mets getting Yoenis Cespedes on this 3-year deal, I think you got to throw them into the mix as well.
Yeah, they become, well, kind of favorites of the National League for sure. With we put him back in that lineup, they got the young pitching rotation. It's solid up and down, those guys.
Yeah, we saw exactly how scary that rotation was last year, and they're only going to be a year older, a year more experienced in 2016. So they're the prohibitive favorites in the East. You know, the Central obviously got some great teams, but, hey, the Mets are the defending champions of the league, and they've got their team back.
Real quick, because we only got a couple minutes, Carl, but he has an opt-out clause after a year. Is that right, Cespedes?
Yeah.
He does, and they've kind of given him an incentive to leave. It's a 3-year, $75 million deal, but if he opts out, he gets $27.5 million after the first year.
So they're trying to win it this year, basically.
Exactly, yeah. And they were trying to give him a deal that would make – I mean, when you think about it, a 3-year deal for a 30-year-old guy like Cespedes, that's a tough sell. So you have to kind of give him a good reason to bite. And next year's class of free agents, particularly in the outfield, is fairly weak. So Cespedes maybe has a better chance of cashing in then.
Yeah, and pretty smart of his agent, I think, because I think that's absolutely correct. And maybe he decides to stay again. He does love the big city. There's no doubt about it. So if he has another big year this year and his agents can get him involved in some marketing stuff and things around New York, no doubt that's a lucrative field for them to play in. And if he can get some of that money too, maybe the guy wants to hang around.
Hey, most definitely. And one of his agents is Jay-Z, so a guy who knows New York well, knows the Yankees well. So pure speculation here, but I would not be surprised if the Yankees are in on the Cespedes bidding next winter.
He's going to do a rap album too, I heard.
Rap album.
I think they actually already have a Cespedes.
Oh,
rap.
Stop.
No, I'm serious, guys. Look it up on YouTube.
Okay.
Carl Buschek, you are the best. I love my baseball picks. I love having you on. Thanks so much for being with us.
Have a good one, guys. Thank you so
Carl.
Much.
See you, Carl.
Carl Buschek, everybody. He's with the Bleacher Report. So we had our last two guests have been from the Bleacher Report. And you should check them out every day. They do a great job with us, and you should check them out for sure.